Hello. I recently spoke at a conference on Christianity and the paranormal aboard the Queen Mary, the ship that was decommissioned in 1967, reputedly haunted by ghosts. The organizers thought this would be a good setting for a conference that investigated the paranormal from a Christian perspective. It was fun. We didn't see any ghosts, though we did see one raccoon inside the ship. I got to speak on a wide variety of subjects. And I talked about the biblical take on things like angels and demons and exorcisms and aliens and so forth. Well, this podcast is not about the paranormal directly, but it's about a series of books that has captured the attention of our world for many years. Just as C.S. Lewis, through the Narnia children's stories, tried to awaken a sense of the spiritual in young readers to even prepare them to receive the truths of Christianity. Just as his friend, Tolkien, wrote the Lord of the Rings series, again, creating a world where good and evil were very distinct to prepare children to believe in spiritual things. So has J.K. Rowling done with the Harry Potter series. Now you may be perplexed that I would even say so. Most of this podcast will not be me. Well, it won't be my content, as I will explain in a moment. But I think I need to say a word of deflection at the outset. Many people, Christian people, react to the words Harry Potter the way that many people would react to an invitation to a séance, as though it's something dark and evil. Well, let me tell you a few reasons I don't take that position. You may take a different position. That's okay. We can still be brothers. I hope you'll still listen to the podcast. Children's stories are full of imaginary beings, dragons, fairies, witches. These are the stories I was brought up with. Never once did it tempt me to get involved in the occult. I never sold my soul to Satan. And those who say that any even possible link to the occult should completely disqualify anything from being considered as entertainment, I think, have to be consistent. Because by this thinking, the Wizard of Oz would have to be banned. After all, there's magic, there's a witch, there's a wizard. Or how about the children's stories, the Three Little Pigs? You've got talking pigs, a talking wolf. I think of the Three Billy Goats Gruff. That was one I liked when I was a little boy. And they were talking goats, and there was a troll who lived under the bridge. I actually think, for a child's imagination, such adventures, such stories are very appropriate. In Harry Potter, the protagonists resist the dark world. They resist the dark lord. It'd be quite a different thing if their goal was to be evil. That is, if these novels were designed to draw children into Satanism. If Voldemort or Malfoy were made heroic, then such a charge might have ground. But it's quite the opposite. And so I think there's several benefits to such stories. One, it helps readers to imagine and to understand the difference between good and evil. I say imagine because sometimes it sounds theoretical until there's a picture, until there's a story. We really do live in a world with good and evil, the relativist. Some of the modernists would have us think that the Bible's not true. Really, religion is just smoke of opinion. Anything that will stimulate us to remember that there is an evil world out there, I think, is serving a positive function. Anything that shows us that there's more to this world than just humdrum spiritual existence. And one other fairly obvious benefit of these kinds of books is they get children reading. And I do wonder, in Christian homes, even if the kids aren't allowed to watch things about vampires and ghosts, what are they allowed to watch? What are they allowed to put into their minds? It may not be dark, but is it frivolous? Is their entertainment diet healthy? Well, I could ask many other things that would take me far off the subject. But I wanted to deflect that because I think it's unfortunate that there's this negative feeling when it comes to stories that I would consider to be harmless, which actually lead to more good than evil. Anyway, I've had a pleasure of speaking at this paranormal conference on apparitions and demons and ghosts and all that, and these are all topics for future and past podcasts. But for right now, I want to share with you something I found recently. I was reading Christianity Today. I'm a subscriber. And I came across this piece on Harry Potter. The lead-in said, "Why the final movie is only the beginning of the Harry Potter phenomenon," by John Granger. I read it. I thought it was intriguing. And because there was contact information, I got hold of the author. And he gave me permission, and so did Christianity Today, to read the article in its entirety. And so I hope I do justice to it. See what you think in this article, which is entitled, "Harry is Here to Stay." As part two of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows opens in theaters worldwide this month, we have reached the final chapter of sorts. It's a phenomenon that began 13 years ago with the release of the first installment in J.K. Rowling's series. I am a Potter pundit who has written and edited as many books about the Hogwarts saga as there are novels in said series. So, you would think I'd be sad to see the tale of the boy wizard come to an end. But I'm not, because the tale is not ending. Harry is here to stay. What makes me think that Pottermania will not go the way of the hula hoop and pet rock is the remarkable ripple effect of Harry's 7-year battle with the Dark Lord. The Hogwarts saga has reshaped our ideas of what a story can and should do, and writers and filmmakers have and will continue to respond to this new set of audience expectations. Rowling's literary genius. With sales of well over 400 million copies, dwarfing all published books not written by God or Chairman Mao, the Harry Potter series is the shared text of our time. Rowling's creation has infused the imaginations of generations of readers, children, parents, and grandparents. The 4,100 pages in its 7 books have been turned into 8 Warner Brothers movies, becoming the most successful film franchise ever, ahead of Star Wars and James Bond. This cultural tsunami suggests Harry Potter is not a passing fad. Rowling's storytelling reveals traditional artistry, with symbols and themes borrowed from Dante, Shakespeare, the Inklings, and other literary greats. Most remarkably, Rowling uses 3 literary devices that are hallmarks of the series. 1. A complex yet nearly invisible ring composition. 2. An alchemical drama. And 3. An engaging picture of the faculties of the soul. Let me explain. Ring composition. The whole series, as well as each book therein, conforms to the touchstones of traditional story scaffolding. Anthropologist Mary Douglas, in her book Thinking in Circles, calls it ring composition. She describes it as a construction of parallelisms that must open a theme, develop it, and round it off by bringing the conclusion back to the beginning. Bible readers might call it chiasmus. Rowling repeatedly hits the three marks of ring writing. The Potter series in each novel have beginnings and ends that meet up. They have centers that both return to the question raised in the beginning and answer the question in the end. And each book and each chapter has its mirrored image, or reverse echo, in the book or chapter on the opposite side of the story divide. Parallelisms define these stories. I think Rowling picked up this chapter structure from her close reading of C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia and Charles Williams's seven novels, which have a similar, if not identical, structure. Both Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, marketed and sold in the U.S. as Sorcerer's Stone, and The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, for instance, are 17 chapters long. Both have their story centers in Chapter 9. Both show an echoing effect between chapters before and after this divide. Alchemical drama. Lewis and Williams, and Rowling after their example, write in circles not just because Boethius, Dante, and medieval poets did, but because they aim to transform readers by giving them an experience of literary alchemy. Stanton Lindon, in Darka Hieroglyphics, says that Shakespeare, Donne, and Milton used the vocabulary and images of alchemy to present stories of Christian transformation. In alchemy, the darkness of lead becomes illumined and enlightened to become gold, a solid light of the world, and the alchemist's heart is restored to Edenic perfection. As a literary medievalist, Lewis used the alchemy motif most obviously in his Space Trilogy. In the world of alchemy, the three movements of transformation are known as the black, white, and red stages. The Space Trilogy parallels these stages as we witness the spiritual dissolution, purification, and perfection of Ransom, the saga's hero. Rowling confirmed her use of alchemical drama in a 1998 interview with Scotland's The Herald. She said, "To invent this wizard world, I've learned a ridiculous amount about alchemy. Perhaps much of it I will never use in the books, but I have to know in detail what magic can and cannot do in order to set the parameters and establish the story's internal logic." Thus, it's no coincidence that the title of Rowling's first work is Philosopher's Stone. Rowling writes in a narrow but deep stream of English letters that begins in Shakespeare's Globe Theatre, permeates the works of the metaphysical poets, Blake, Coleridge, and Yeats, and is seen in novels from Dickens' A Tale of Two Cities to Williams's Many Dimensions. Soul Triptych. Rowling puts a peculiar inkling twist on the schoolboy novel formula of three lead characters. Ron, Hermione, and Harry embody the three faculties of the soul. These faculties are described by Lewis in the essay Men Without Chests from The Abolition of Man, what we call body, mind, and spirit. It's a literary mechanism as old as the legend of the charioteer in Plato's Phaedrus and the soul triptych in the brothers Karamazov. We see it more recently in Frodo, Sam, and Gollum on Mount Doom, Han, Luke, and Leia in Star Wars, and Kirk, Spock, and McCoy in Star Trek. This type of story works because, entering into fiction, we suspend disbelief. We shut down our critical faculties. Looking with this eye of the heart, instead of the mind, we see our reflection looking back at us from the hero, who represents the spirit in these triptychs, and identify with what he or she experiences. In Rowling's world, Harry plays this role as hero and spirit to the max. He always chooses the right path, usually at risk to his life while fighting the Dark Lord. Dumbledore tells Harry repeatedly that Harry's power is his capacity for love. Harry survives many near deaths because of his bond of blood with the sacrificial love of his mother. 7 years in a row, Harry dies a near death and rises from the dead in the presence of, or as a symbol, of Christ. Our hearts recognize, resonate with, and thrill to Harry's annual death to self and resurrection. Like Lewis, Williams, and other greats, Rowling has written a spiritual allegory of the soul's transformation to perfection in Christ. Fiction, as philosopher and historian of religion Mircea Eliade explained in The Sacred and the Profane, serves a religious function in a secular culture. Moderns are immunized against sacramental experience, prayer, and worship, yet still long for the transcendent, something beyond the ego. We find it in sports, film, and music, but most powerfully in books, especially in novels in which the heart recognizes its reflection in a character like Harry. We recognize and imaginatively experience our heart's end in Christ's victory over death. Harry's effect on popular lit. The elements that made Harry Potter so popular have combined to create a new template for popular fiction. Three of the best-selling series of the 21st century are Stephanie Meyer's Twilight, Suzanne Collins' Hunger Games, and Patrick Ness's Chaos Walking. The three series are in different genres: teen gothic romance, post-apocalyptic anti-war novel, and dystopian young adult science fiction, respectively. Yet their commonalities are striking. Each is alchemical. Each is crafted in a ring composition. Each has a soul triptych with a central character we identify with. Each has a sub-theme about thought or mind as the fabric of existence. Hence, Edward Cullen's telepathy in the Twilight series, the mental noise in Chaos Walking, and Dumbledore's message to Harry in the Deathly Hallows that the greater reality is inside his head, an exchange Rowling describes as the key to the whole series. Each of these books' heroes, too, has resurrection experiences after a sacrificial death. It would be amazing enough if Twilight and Harry Potter, together with sales of over 500 million copies, follow this model. That Collins and Ness also use it while featuring the thought as fabric of reality theme makes this pattern remarkable. The storytelling genius behind Pottermania has bled into the work of the next generation of novelists, dubbed Generation Hex. Publishers are on the lookout for authors who write like Rowling, and it's no doubt one reason Little Brown and Company offered Meyer, an unpublished stay-at-home mom, a $750,000 advance. Her debut book popped positively at every Potter checkpoint. The magic behind the magic. The literary elements that typify the Harry Potter series have been around a long time, but Rowling's novels have brought them to our full attention. Rowling instinctually knew what readers want by using these tools, the magic behind the magic, so to speak. Rowling did not create the truth of the Eliade thesis, that novels satisfy a spiritual hunger in a secular culture, but her saga has confirmed it spectacularly. Harry Potter revealed, rather than created, the great spiritual hunger of our time. The publishing industry and Hollywood are responding to this by delivering stories that borrow Rowling's model. The industry simply cannot ignore the Potter Twilight elephants in the accounting room. Despite these massive successes, the idea that Rowling's writing template is shaping our future book and film experiences may seem a stretch. Still, I'm convinced that Harry Potter is not only reshaping our present and future, but also our past, at least our understanding of it. As literary critic F.R. Leavis wrote about Jane Austen in The Great Tradition, Rowling's achievement has for us a retroactive effect. As we look back beyond her, we see in what goes before and see because of her potentialities and significances brought out in such a way that for us she creates her tradition we see leading down to her. Her work, like the work of all great creative writers, gives a meaning to the past. Rowling admits that her writing essentially grew out of the compost heap of her prior reading. And a rich heap it is. Shakespeare, Dante, Dickens, Austen, Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, Lewis, Tolkien, even Nabokov received more than hat tips and cursory allusions. Her choices of narrative voice, Austen's Emma, alchemical structure, Dante's Commedia, Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, ring composition, Lewis Williams and many others, heart hero, Dostoevsky's Brothers, Montgomery's Anne of Green Gables, and her eye and mirror symbolism, Coleridge's Ancient Mariner, Poe's The Telltale Heart, MacDonald's Lilith, Dodgson's Alice are the stuff and substance of her greater magic. So, as Harry Potter has become the shared text of Generation Hex, its readers are given fresh points of access into these classics. And these entry points will inevitably color our understanding of what came before us. The release of the final Harry Potter movie isn't an end at all. The Hogwarts saga, through its revelation of the great hunger of readers for transcendence and ultimately resurrection, has provided both a role model for future novelists and screenwriters, as well as incentives for publishers and studios to seek out these postmodern parables. This is a great thing. The love of these books and their characters confirms the power of traditional Christian literary arts to reach and stir the human heart. It also confirms Tertullian's remarkable observation that all souls are Christian souls, that we all have darkened hearts that only Christ can illumine. Well, that's John Granger's thoughtful essay. And if you like literature, it's deep. I wish I'd written it. He's obviously brilliant. I'm so grateful that he gave permission for me to read this. I find, as perhaps you have, that often I'll read something and not realize how I've been affected. And it might be Lewis, it might be Tolkien, it might be J.K. Rowling, that there are spiritual themes on the surface, sometimes under, sometimes deep under, but they're right there all along. And as this article points out, the death and resurrection motif. And so, is Potter a good thing or a bad thing? You can make your decision about that. But is he here to stay? It certainly seems that is the case.